Voices Radio Network.
Welcome to the Strength Depositions Podcast. We're sitting here at the world-famous Strength Depot in Plymouth, Michigan. I'm Chuck Zarowski. I'm sitting here with Shane Rickman, Rob Fucciarelli, Drew Ottaway, and we have two special guests with us today. We have one of the best powerlifters in the world, Kevin Smith, and his lovely wife, Mary. So, guys, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, and again, I'll say in the state of Michigan, not the world, but thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, Chuck.
Well, we're glad that you came out here. I know, like, you're dealing with some injury problems. Your last meet, you ended up tearing your pec, and we do appreciate you coming out. How's the rehab going, Kevin?
Absolutely slow. I'm doing nothing for it right now because I just got to let it bleed out. As you can see, well, for the podcast, they can't see, but
you're lactating.
Yeah. Yes. That's from the trend. But yeah, right now I'm just letting it do its thing for a couple weeks, then I'll start the real rehab in probably about 4 weeks.
Well, we're sitting here. Rob Fucciarelli is here, and Rob and Kevin go way, way back. So what we're going to do is just let these two go at it for a little while and tell us maybe some gym stories and how they trained when they started and whatnot. So, Shane, you wanted to add something?
I was just telling Kevin that this usually ends up turning into a stroke fest of complimenting each other and how you've helped me and Rob's helped me and I motivate Chuck, and so I was just letting Kevin know to lay back and relax, and I hope Mary doesn't get too jealous.
There's cigarettes after, folks. So, Rob, take it away.
My self-esteem when I leave here is always soaring after all this stroking, so... When did we start up? We started up, you said, 2006?
It was August of 2006.
You remember dates and months. And
well, yeah, it's very important because you were working at Kniff. I was at Western Wayne, and I came there for something. And you talked to me about coming to train with you because I'd been weightlifting a little bit. And finally, I decided I would go. It was a Sunday. You never showed.
You gotta be kidding
no,
me.
No, you didn't show. I think you competed that Saturday.
Dick.
I ended up...
You're gonna earn them straps.
No, I ended up benching with Joe Martin.
I'm sorry.
It was great because I watched the guy bench 600 pounds in a shirt, and I was hooked. That's all it took. But I called you later that night, I think, and we figured out another date. But by November, remember when I fell deadlifting, and I had to have the knee surgery. I had the knee surgery in December. That didn't go well. I had another one in April. Then it was 07 when me and her were getting married. And I was just kind of messing around with it. But on our honeymoon, I was talking to her about it. I said, I really want to get the lifting thing going. And so basically since October of 07. But I had two surgeries because I fell over deadlifting. And yeah, that's when we started. But we were kind of on and off because, like I said, I had two surgeries. And
no doubt.
Was that just poor coaching or...
It was all horrible coaching and a guy trying to lead me into sumo deadlifting. And, yeah, I fell backwards. My knee went sideways for a split second. It was awesome to see, but not to feel.
I remember that.
And
the old DBB.
The very first DBB. Everybody laughed at me as I'm trying to get my legs straight.
Yeah, and, it sounds like DBB.
But, you know, I was hooked, though. Like, the day we got married... I was at DBB at 6 in the morning, got out of there at 9.
Oh, sorry, Mary.
Was married by 1 o'clock. That was my day.
No, you're a meathead.
She doesn't like that.
Sorry. You are, though.
But, yeah, that's our beginnings. But
was there some bro love is what I'm feeling right off the bat, and you wanted to do this. I remember
I was 200 pounds of
195 to be exact.
Yeah, I was under 200 pounds of nothing, and I just wanted to be strong as I possibly could. Didn't really care about my weight because I mean it seemed like 2 years later I was 270, natty, and this shit was fun. I just kept eating and lifting, and there was. I know there was days where we'd go to DBB, we'd get there about 4:30, 5 o'clock before work, pushing the prowler, flipping fucking tires before work, and those are the really
working
early
16
days.
Hours. Yeah. I remember working midnights all night, and we stayed up all night and worked, and the minute we got off work, we went and fucking trained like animals.
We worked at Navarre for 24 hours, got off work, went to DBB, trained, then we met, that was the day of my bachelor party. Remember?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Craziness.
Just so everybody knows, Rob and Kevin work together. So you guys have worked together for how many years?
Ooh. Well, he's been in the company longer than I have, but we've both been in the same position coming up on 12 years this December. But it was we met each other in our old jobs at the same company just one day over the summer.
And I influenced you over to that job as well.
I was already going.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was already going.
I wasn't trying to make it.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
I took that stroke back. but yeah, no, we met each other one time, and then when we came over, it was just, two meathead bromances fucking blossoming. And we trained together for about 4 straight years, just about. It was
2 Sagittariuses.
Yeah. But 2 different styles of lifters all together, because you were a geared lifter. I've always been a raw lifter.
But all my training was, for the most part.
Yeah.
We front squat. We zurchered. We, conduit method. We were west side for a long time.
Yeah. I never understood any of that, to be honest with you. I just figured you would lead the way and I will follow and just try not to get hurt. And we didn't really get hurt. We were just always just kind of...
I was sending you article after fucking article and this so and that. And now you do the sending and the teaching, and now I'm all ears. So it's funny how life comes full circle, and I'm totally in the dark. I don't know anything anymore or what's going on, and you keep me current,
I don't know. I don't know when that switch happened, though. Like, there was
probably
a time...
when you got to 270.
Yeah, but there was a time where you taught me everything, and then... there was a lull, and then we rehooked up, and it was kind of reversed a little bit. You were done with gear because it was just destroying you. You know what I want to bring up?
It's a constant theme.
Remember that? I want to bring up this meet in Trenton, your 950 squat that was stolen from you, because it was at that theater, and you were the leanest and strongest you'd ever been in your life.
I missed all my warm-ups in the warm-up room, and I couldn't use one leg.
But you were so...
I knew my mom was coming, though, and that was the first time she'd seen me lift. I was mean as fuck.
But you were so on that fucking platform. I've never seen you squat so deep without the people in gear. They'll kind of sway back and forth a little bit. You're seeing them kind of trying to get everything out of that fucking suit to get down there. But you just back... And I heard the go.
I can back that shit up sometimes.
Holy fucking shit. And me and Keith, Keith's a long-time training partner of mine, friend of Rob's, and we couldn't believe he didn't get that fucking... It was 2 reds. And I was like, what the fuck?
Any
you
other
have to
state?
Do?
That
was, holy
that's
fucking shit. It was so...
It was a great time.
It was probably one of the most beautiful squats I've ever seen. You were, 242 at that time?
Mm-hmm.
You cut to 242. And still to this, I remember it because I feel like you got robbed so bad. That was probably the highlight of... your lifting career for me was seeing you do that all these years.
It was
always
funny that you're just chasing numbers, and somewhere along the line with injuries coming to the sport, injured, it was never meant for me to be, and that was okay, but you could chase a number, you could chase a lift, that had to be your thing, to just chase a thing, because you're never going to do all 3 if you don't have...
Well, everybody here at this table, including my wife, knows once you get number X that you've been chasing for who cares about what time. As soon as you get X, Y is right fucking there. It lasts a millisecond. I just pulled 770 in my last meet in December, out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
I had a horrible muscle spasm 5 weeks prior and barely kind of like limped into this fucking thing. And my best pull to the time was 749. And I needed 770 for 2000. I refused to lift under 2000 anymore. I'll never do it again. And I fucking pulled it like it was an empty bar. Where does that shit fucking come from? I don't know. But immediately once I hit that 770, I was like, 800 ain't too fucking far. And
let me just say, though, during this meet, on top of it, when he went up for his 770, I'm in the back of the camera going, oh, he's delusional. He ain't ever going to get it. I'm like, oh, shit. Hope he doesn't hear that on the camera. Literally, oh, he's delusional. And he got it.
Nobody thought I had it. Andrew, you said the thing, the heart. Yeah. You pointed at your heart. All I remember is when I told the table 770, I went off into the corner and didn't want to be around nobody. And just thought to myself, Kev, you're a 2,000-pound fucking lifter. If you lift anything less, what the fuck's it matter anymore? No one cares about less than 2,000. Raw. In sleeves. It's all that matters is 2,000-plus. So I just kept pacing, telling myself, this is what you got to fucking do. And I fucking did it. And it amazed me. I was fucking shocked. And everyone else had that same look shocked on their face. But you know what was really cool? I don't know where I'm going with this, but I've never been the last lifter of a meet, you know, because you always have some geared lifter going for something big or a deadlift only guy going for something big. Full meters don't usually finish off meets, especially a raw guy.
It's a balance.
Yeah.
But I did, and I was the last one, and I fucking got it. And, man, that was my first 2000 was cool because I traveled to Atlantic City for it. But this one, I passed out on my second fucking squat, and I still came through with a nice 505 bench. And, man, it was I was kind of heavy, 297-ish. But fuck it. It was 2,000 on a fucking shitty fucking injury and a fucking pass out. That's probably been my favorite meet now that I stole that fucking thing, rambling.
But, Once again, every lifter that we've had on is manifesting. You know, everyone wants to know, especially newer people or with the internet, sets, reps. And that's great. But it all comes back to I gotta fucking have it. I gotta have this respect for myself. I've gotta have this honor that I've put in years. Injuries, whatnot, but you had to fucking have it.
We could put in the sets and reps like no tomorrow. Because I'm injured now, I just did this bench only thing, which was super fucking foreign to me. It was really weird to get mentally ready for this thing. So I found a program from a guy from the 80s, this full meter, but he had this awesome bench only program, 12 weeks. I probably should have shortened it up. And I got injured halfway through it, or 6 weeks in, just a little bit of an injury. But I still took a little bit break, came back, but it was funny as I programmed myself for 535 bench press. And I took 529 at the meet because of the injury, but holy fucking shit, did that bar feel light in my hands before my pec completely disintegrated? But it felt so fucking light. So there is a scheme to this shit. It's more than always for the Facebook posts, you know, and all that stuff. You really got to put good time into these programs, really work the reps and the sets and follow them, because you can really kind of, if you always take the day, especially if you're prepping for a competition, if you're feeling it, you got to kind of hold yourself back. You got to, you know.
Miss you.
Hi, JJ.
JJ Thomas is leaving the building, folks.
point of that long story is, if you're being coached, listen to your fucking coaches. Reps and sets are there for a reason. Just because you're fucking feeling it doesn't mean you need to take a run at it every fucking time. Because it's all meant for meat day, not fucking Instagram. I just summed that one up.
I like that.
It was pretty.
Yeah. It's 100% true, though.
So, Kevin, you know, like we were talking about, like you've dealt with, you know, you're dealing with your injuries right now.
Not just one, but two.
Multiple, because you're dealing with the glute tear as well.
Yep.
Like, but inside you, like right now, I mean, you want to lift, right? You're chomping at the bit right now to get under the bar, right? How hard is it to not try and lift?
Well, I wouldn't say it's not hard.
Okay.
Because I know if I fuck around now, I'm just going to be that far
prolonging
my recovery. Yesterday, me and my wife were sitting in the house on a Tuesday, normally when we're in the garage training, and we're like, what do we do? we kind of looked at each other.
Which meal prep?
what do we do? We've packed our lives with this weightlifting, and we love it. But now that right now our garage gym is tore down, we don't have anything to do. So for me, it's kind of easy because I really want to get back to being a full meter. Being bench only really sucked to me. I didn't like it mentally. It played on me emotionally, I feel, because I didn't know how to prep. I've always done full meets, and I like thinking about every aspect of the planning for the meet day of, well, I could probably hit somewhere in here, so planning my attempts. But if I miss one, how am I going to make that next jump? For me, it's I got three attempts. It was almost too easy. So my pec tear 6 or 7 weeks out, the slight pec tear, almost made it a little bit more fun in a stupid way because it just became more challenging.
Up the ante.
Yeah, it upped the ante. And I like I said, I went for 529. I probably should have went just 517 for the biggest raw bench that day to outbench a guy that I actually coach.
Is that Gary?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I said, fuck it. I feel 501 flew like an empty bar. Let's party. And I gambled and I lost.
Did it work for you, like, being injured that you can't deadlift or squat, but you're still in the game? Was that satisfying in its way of just that I'm still trying to up these numbers? I can still, you know what I'm trying to say?
Not really. It didn't satisfy the want because every day my people are still coming over, training at my garage. They're still squatting and deadlifting.
That'd be aggravating.
I'm in the garage with my wife while she's squatting and deadlifting. And I'm kind of just like, well, this sucks. Those are my two favorite lifts. I actually hate benching. It's not my favorite lift at all. But I've somehow just gotten kind of good at it in the past year or so. But no, it doesn't satisfy me at all. I miss front squatting. I was still overhead pressing. I can't overhead press now. But no, it doesn't satisfy anything because I'm a full meat guy. If I was a single lift guy, if I was a bench only guy, and that's all I need. But me, I like deadlifting. To me, that's the fight of all fights.
One of the most impressive things I've ever seen you do is when you hit that 600-pound front squat, and it really pissed me off because I would have loved to have done that, but just I thought that was fucking surreal. And there's stronger people out there or do this or do that, but if you can front squat 600 pounds, that's a lifetime accomplishment. That's pretty fucking awesome.
Without passing out, that's an accomplishment.
Yes. If I get through one workout without passing out.
Yeah. You're a deadlift only guy, Andrew. Are you prepping to become full, like...
Full power?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I love deadlifting, and so I've been mainly focusing towards that at meets just because I've been trying to be really competitive in the sport, and that's where I'm competitive at. And in the past, I've had to take time off from squatting, but currently I'm competing deadlift only right now because I'm unable to bench because I have some pretty bad issues with my bicep tendon. I'm about one pull away with like a pretty decently heavy weight from tearing it. So that's always a big concern for me right now. So I'm trying to get healthy, and then I'll be back to full power as soon as I can, because ultimately that's what powerlifting is.
So kind of like what he just asked me, does doing the other two lifts satisfy you, or is you only feeling, just to kind of bounce off what I was saying, you get satisfied in the sport by just the deadlift, or the other two, do you feel something like you're missing something?
So I guess I've always loved deadlifting so much. So if I'm able to deadlift, then I'm happy. But at the same time, I love squatting so much. I'm not really, I hate benching because I have ridiculously long arms.
That's I got a trick for that.
I'm good at sumo. But I, yeah, I really do wish that I could be squatting and benching competitively right now. Unfortunately, I'm stuck just training my squat towards my deadlift since I'm only able to compete deadlift only since I can't bench. So
how old are you?
I'm 23 right now.
Oh, so
I got some time.
And for those, Drew's, we've discussed this, but Drew's pretty hated on Instagram. And for those who think he's only a deadlift only guy, he front squatted with us the other day. And I think, like we've discussed, we've got a little friendly rivalry and everybody cheers for everybody. But at the end of the day, you want to have the – and Drew ended up front squatting 420-ish.
Yeah, something like that.
Pretty easily. And I just went, motherfucker. Like I thought – I thought this, you know, the kid who pulls 750, I'm like, well, at least I'll be able to out squat him. And he hit that 420 pretty easy. And I'm like, God damn it. Like he's a strong kid all the way around. So.
All I can say is, like, you know, and I've talked about this on the last couple episodes, like, I'm dealing with a labrum tear on my hip, and I'm dealing with, like, a... Yeah, and I'm dealing with a shoulder injury myself, too. So here I am, and I'm trying to, like, I'm going through depression right now because I can't fucking do what I want to do. Like, you know, and I'm not, like, I do all three lifts as well, but my thing is, like, I can't get weight under my back, and the feeling of having weight on your back... There's nothing like it. And the feeling of having, like, weight in your hands, there's really nothing like it. And I'm trying to deal with it. Rob's helping me along a little bit with, you know, Drew's been helping me, too, with a little bit of flexibility, a little bit of, like, like yesterday I did some good mornings, heavy-ass good mornings, because I can't load my hips really well. So good mornings, at least I keep my hips, you know, like, at least my legs are almost straight, and so I can come down and not load my hips quite as much. And I felt alive for the first time in a couple weeks. Like, I mean, like, I've been just kind of mulling around here.
You got an endorphin release for the first time in a couple of weeks. That's what that was. You got to feel that rush, the adrenaline of moving something for the first time. And
I'm doing it.
Yeah, and that's what it was. So to not, you know, like, and I'm nowhere near your weights, you know, and I probably never will be. Doesn't mean I'm not going to try. But at the same token, I missed that endorphin rush, and I missed feeling those weights. Are you going through a similar thing?
Yeah, I would say so.
Sick.
But I think with having a garage gym 16 steps from my back door and people there on a pretty regular basis, at least 6 days a week outside of Monday, we have people over training. At least I get to be around it, even though I'm not 100% into it. I still coach a little bit to the guys that, you know, train with me, the ones who want me to coach them. A lot of guys, you know, they've been with me a long time. They know my cues. They know how I want to see them lift. But yeah, I wouldn't call it a depression, but it's just like a, you know, I'm 39. I'll be 40 at the end of the year. I know my window or door isn't closed, but there's maybe only a good 5 or 6 years left in this body of peak level where I want a 21, 21, 25, 21, 50 raw total in sleeves. Before I'm done, I don't care if it comes at super fucking heavyweight, but super heavyweight's 309.
Yeah. So,
I feel with the way I built a squat, and I know I can deadlift, I can get me to 1600 pretty fucking easily with just those two lifts. And the way my bench is going, let's see how it reacts after the pec tear. There's no way in the next 18 months or 18 months from full heel that I shouldn't be able to bench 550. I was actually planning on doing that this year, making a run at it at least, 550. But that's what keeps me from getting to the depression state, because I still see fucking numbers. Yeah. Every time I go in there or I watch a video of myself not too long ago, and I see I'm not too far from that again.
The dream's still out there. You're still chasing the dragon, you know?
Yeah.
You know, one thing I always noticed with you, and that was really smart, and I was always very dumb, which is a common theme I'm finding, is that when you became injured, you shut it down, what you needed to shut down. There was a total discipline to, this is the course I'm going. I won't deviate from this. You won't catch me fucking with this.
Even you today tried to coax me into some bent over rows as soon as I got here.
I'm a pusher. It's a little something.
Yeah, and I didn't bite because I've got a plan. It could be right, it could be wrong, but it's my plan to get me healthy again. But I always shut it down because that's the best way to come back to it is just, you know, 100% leave it alone and then start playing, you know, when I feel it's right. I know me better than anybody. I don't care about no fucking doctor or MRI. I know me better than anybody. And we could all say that because we've all lived it for a very long fucking time. We know me. And when you start feeling it, then you start going a little bit. And if you go too far, you step back a little bit. And then when you're 100%, then we go full fucking retard and then we do what we do.
I think that's a mistake. Go ahead, Rob. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I noticed that with Shane, too, coming back from, I mean, has there been anyone I know with more surgeries, serious fucking surgeries and injuries? And this time, I wasn't there for the last time, but you played it so smart and were, you know, was just incremental in what you would do. You weren't going to push this, but you worked what you could work. You do what you can do. And then when the other thing's healed, you're okay, nice and slow and everything else.
And I'm going to play off of what Kevin said. I'm a little bit older. I'm 43, so I know, like I said, my window's even closed a little bit further than that. But 2015, I came in third at U.S. Nationals in strongman, so 2016 was going to be my year. Like, I'm going to own it. I'm going to get a pro card. And then I had a bicep tear. So I'm like, son of a bitch, you know, so I couldn't compete. And then 2017, it's in Detroit, it's in my hometown. This is going to be my year. I'm going to get it.
Hurts even
and
worse.
And then I have shoulder surgery, so I can't get in. And I probably could have come back for this one, which is actually this weekend, but I just wasn't feeling it. I didn't want to push it and do something stupid and have something else. And then I'm out another 8 months. So I'm taking my time. Like Kevin said, I've got maybe 3 or 4 good years left. And
I wanted to say I did the same thing after my December meet. I actually even wrote it on a fucking mirror, the numbers I wanted hit by the end of this year. And in January, I blew a fucking glute out, which I didn't even know until just a couple weeks ago. So I'll never, ever do that again. Once you said you thought 2015 was going to be your year, I'll never, ever plan like that again. Because first time I ever did it was this year. Then, boom, 2 weeks into the fucking year, actually my fourth training session, I tore a muscle. I will never, ever plan like that again.
And that was something that was bugging you for a long time that now became compounded and,
yeah,
and tore.
I didn't know. I just thought it was a muscle spasm, a piriformis fucking syndrome, which I was being told, and I probably should have had the MRI initially, but I will never, ever plan like that again. I'm just going to go week by fucking week like I always have, or meet to meet.
Can I win this week? Can I win this workout?
That's all that fucking matters. I'm never going to take a fucking year again like that, because first time I did it, boom, 2 fucking tears.
Do you think that calling a number is jinxing yourself, like
mentally?
No.
I mean, we're all
because we're always chasing. Like I said earlier, as soon as I hit 501 bench back in April of last year, I wanted 505. I wanted 510. You know, it was, where can I go?
Think of what you just said, though. You wanted 505, and I think the typical newbie or the
right.
We talked about this.
I just benched
early.
501. I'm going to bench 550 next week. Give me 10 week cycle, and boom, I'm good to go. No, that's the stupidest fucking thing I love seeing on the Instagrams and Facebook. And I never comment on them because I just don't care enough about that. Because I'm more into the people who I train or the people that train with me or my wife's training to really care about what other people do. And I get a kick out of it. But I got to say, though, too, it's not like I'm hoping that they don't get it. I just think it's funny. It's like, dude, you have no fucking idea how long it takes just to put 5 pounds on one lift. When you're at absolutely 100% and you're peaked, and you hit that number, to get another 5 pounds the same way, it's fucking hard. It is. It takes so much time, so much effort, so much sacrifice for your family and everything that you do. Planning, staying in because you got to eat or you want to sleep and shit like that. It's just for 5 pounds. We're doing it in a sport that no one cares about. Well, it's starting to get more known. But yeah, it's not easy. The amount of sacrifice is ridiculous just for 5 pounds when you really think about it.
We were, you know, like if you're new to lifting, some of you are probably new to lifting, and all of a sudden you're getting these amazing gains like the first year. You're starting to put weight on like crazy. You're starting to get you're starting to get bigger. People are starting to notice. Your bench press is going up, squat, all that other stuff is going up. There comes a time, guys, when that stops. there comes a time when, you know, your body adapts to a certain point, and there comes a time when, like Kevin said, 5 pounds is not easy to put on anything. So you're sitting there and you're at your absolute strength and you're at the peak of your strength. In order to go beyond that, you've got to get your body to adapt, and the things that you have to do are, you know, and they're intense. So, I mean, we all kind of know that.
A lot of times you have to change something in your programming just to get that added 5 pounds. Technique could change. It's something I've always said. I don't know when I started saying it. Maybe it's probably when, you know, 5-6 years ago as I was getting older. But today, right now, is the absolute youngest you'll ever be. For the rest of your life, right now is the youngest you'll ever be. And your body keeps changing. For as long as me and you have lifted, Rob, the amount of changing we had to do in programs or lifting just to kind of fit the way our body aches differently. We're not necessarily injured, but just the normal aches, the elbow tendonitis, bicep tendonitis, shoulder tendonitis. I had quad tendonitis for 3 years, all because I didn't roll out my fucking quads. I went and seen Becky over at Tricovery. She, boom, tendonitis is gone. She goes, yeah, you're locked up like you're a fucking ham. She goes, I feel no muscle fibers. She goes, you're so locked up. I don't know how every time you don't squat, your knees don't fall apart. But those are things that I didn't do when I was younger because my knees never bother me. But your body's constantly changing. So to get that 5 pounds, you're going to be another 10 or 13 weeks older if you don't do an off season. You go from meet to meet to meet. Your body changes, and you got to roll with it and notice it quick enough. This is something you need to pay attention to, young guy. Your body's going to change a lot, and you've got to notice it. And when you do, adapt, because there's just going to be that day where, you know, a quad tendon just fucking snaps because you didn't roll them out enough. And there's another 18 months, so you got to pay attention to your body. But
look at how much you've had to change. I had to change. Shane had to change. Everyone, and putting in all that work before you even begin to lift. Putting in all that work after you lift to recover, to ex-wife, to stretch. There's constantly, every conversation we have, what are you doing for rehabilitation? What are you doing for recovery? What's your, you know, how is this affecting you? How is this stretch affecting your lift? Just to get to meet day, all the work that goes in, or just on a typical max effort night in the garage, all the things that had to go in to accomplish a successful night.
I've always viewed this, and I actually wrote an article for this, I think from my buddy's website when he was at Wayne State, about injuries. An injury is a bad thing because we can't fucking lift. We can't do what we want to do. But it's an opportunity to learn from a mistake. You can take all the time you need to learn why whatever happened. Like for me, a pec tear happened. Well, it was extraordinarily tight. I need to do a lot more body tempering. But it's definitely not because of the way I bench, because I damn near close grip bench. So it's not like I'm benching wide like I did years ago. And next thing you know, I had shoulder surgery because I was putting all that stress in my shoulders. So slowly I just kept bringing my hands in. And then benching became super easy because I would kind of use my lat muscles as like a bench shirt.
You found your leverage.
Yeah, I found my leverage. And but the pec tear is just because I was building them up so fast that I never gave them a chance to stretch out and breathe.
How many years did it take you to find your leverage to do that? How much trial and error, you know, that's...
8 years. 8 years to learn how to bench. Ain't that some bullshit? Motherfucker, how much farther I'd be.
So if you could take it back and roll it back, and what would you tell a 30-year-old, a 28-year-old, a 25-year-old Kevin to apply that wisdom now, you take over the world. I mean, you could, and yeah. It's such a treat to have the internet, to have all these people that you can now apply that, whereas we were pioneering that stuff when it first happened, and there was none of this. You know?
When people reach out to me, which isn't frequently, but it does happen, and I decided to coach them. I love Instagram because it makes it very easy. They could just direct DM me their videos, and it's very easy to coach because I'll get different angles and things like that. But I love working with newer lifters, people within the first couple years.
Why?
Because like Chuck said, they're already past that point of where all the newbie gains are starting to wear off, and all the brute force is now out of it, and they're struggling.
They're not just muscling.
They want to learn how to actually perform the lift properly. I watched you at our meet that we technically you are sound as I've ever seen a sumo deadlifter outside of maybe Dan Green, but even Dan's Green ass will shoot straight up if you've noticed.
Yeah.
You not so much, and to me that's a technically sound lift. I had a lifter there that I coached for that competition, and for free I worked with him on nothing but technique for 8 weeks, and then he bought a program, and then I coached him for the program. He gets to the meet and it's like he forgot all about the technique, and he missed a lot of lifts. And I told him that I said, this was you just being stupid, being too ramped up. He had a bit of an issue where the meet he was prepping for was canceled 3 weeks earlier, so he had to try to stay peaked, which is not fun when you're doing a program for somebody. But I tried to keep him there. But he lost all of his technique, and I could tell in every friggin' lift. And I've talked to him afterwards. It's like, what happened? He's like, I missed it for this or that reason. The general reasons we always hear. And I'd have him pull out the video and show me. I go, dude, you're giving everything up. He's losing his back on his squat. He's flaring his shoulders on his bench. And he's fucking rounding his back like no tomorrow on his fucking deadlift. It's like, we fixed all that. Now you're not. So I like working with new lifters because a lot of times it's all just technique. And
lack of ego too, or?
Egos don't usually make it to me. I'm working with a guy who's quite advanced. And he just loves my style of training. I love Evan Mensing. He's like a 2176 guy, raw, 275, super jacked. Thinks I'm fucking crazy for the way I train, and thinks I should be in like the 2250 total, the way I train
with the volume and everything else.
Yes, because Evan's completely different. But see, He found something that works for him, and he does it. But if you watch Evan, he's so technically sound in all of his lifts. Yes, it's going to work because he knows his leverages. He puts the force behind the bar, and he moves it.
Ed Cohn, like, you know, and I think I've referenced Eddie before. Like, if you're a powerlifter and you haven't referenced Eddie, I don't know who you are. But Ed Cohn always said he took 135 like he took 900. It was always the same technique just to be reinforced.
A lot of the greats say that. I've met some very, very insane lifters in my life because I love to travel to compete. That's something me and my wife have done for about the past 5 years. But the most impressive lifter I've ever seen, he's so not conventional and he's not pretty, is J.P. Price. When I watched him lift in San Diego last year, I mean, he's a beautiful lifter. He's a huge man. But nothing is, like, technically super sound. He is all muscle. He's all mean, and he's all nasty. But he's the nicest motherfucker in the world. But when you see him walking to that platform, because I was sitting next to him almost the whole time because we were in the same flight, I just felt the anger and the heat coming off him. I'm like, oh, I like this guy.
That's awesome.
And I was expecting to get that from Zahir Kudiarev. But no, came off of that motherfucker. And it was beautiful. But
that warm-up area had to be just heaven to watch those cats getting after it.
Huh? Oh yeah. The warm up area out there was actually insane because there's only one monolift.
Okay.
Yeah. The people who could walk out did. I cannot. I will never be able to walk out. I admit it. I'm a monolift squatter. So the funny thing was Rob Philippus. He didn't take one squat until five plates.
My God.
But he's a world class wrestler. And I'm in there warming up, and I'm kind of walking around.
Saving himself.
I see him outside kicking in the air and just getting his hips mobile and getting his monstrous fucking quads warmed up. And it was cool. And I walked over to Justin Gross, who came with them to handle them. And I know they trained together for a long time. I go, dude, does he know we're warmed up? He goes, just watch. I was like, all right. He's like, you'll be in here in a minute. But, yeah, it was like – meathead show after meathead show, we're just fucking packing ourselves in here to get under this fucking monolift. And obviously, because Zahir was there and he was opening at a world fucking record, we all wanted to watch his warm-ups. But he looked shaky, and obviously you've seen it, you know, when he dropped the bar on Daniel Bell, and then the only one squat he did, it was just a bit high. But the funny story from that competition, if I could say, is Daniel Bell, Big Dan, one of the nicest guys in the fucking world, was going to deadlift, and Zaheer grabs me by my shoulders, looks me in the face, and just screams, "Kill back, kill back." I didn't know what the fuck it meant, but I knew I had to go smack Dan Bell as hard as I fucking could in the fucking back. So I walked up to him, and I'm a big guy. I'm just under 6'2", 300 pounds. And it was like I was hitting that fucking wall back there. He is so fucking big and massive. But he's such a goofball and nice guy. But, man, I fucking hit him, and he didn't even look. And I know I laid everything I had into him. And he just goes, and I don't remember if he got it or not, because I was actually in a lot of pain from hitting him. But, yeah, just a little story from traveling. But, yeah, that was a really fun meet. The warm-up room was awesome. Once the heater got out of it, some of the luster kind of eh. But fun, yes. It was really cool seeing so many really, really phenomenal lifters nowadays that were raw. And even Brian Carroll in the Jimmy Pacifico competition between them two, because they were the only two geared guys, I think. And I know,
had to be a ball to see.
You know what was funny?
Brian is absolutely amazing. So is Jimmy.
They are great. I fucking love them dudes. But Brian Carroll did a meet earlier that year, and he got some questionable calls. Well, if anyone ever questioned him again after this fucking thing, he buried, what, 1,075, 1,080 squat?
At 242?
At 242 in multiply. I was standing in the back with somebody, and I go, "Where'd his head go?" Because he went so fucking low. And he just popped back up. I go, "Holy fucking shit. He came up with that?" It was amazing. And then there's Jimmy right on top of him. They went back and forth. Watching that battle between them two was a lot of fun. I was battling a guy that I was actually kind of coaching that day, which was kind of weird. I coached the guy to 9 for 9, and I went 7 for 9. But it was such a fun day, such a fun meet. And then you're in San Diego, which is phenomenal in itself. But, yeah, I if anyone takes anything from this story, travel to do competitions. Yeah, Brandon Lilly was there. Sweet Burns. Dan Green was there. Tony Montgomery, Sweet, did I already say Sweet? Like I said, JP Price, Zaheer, Dan Bell, Rob Philippus. Fuck, there's a whole bunch of women lifters. I don't really follow women lifting a lot, but some of the Salazar, she's, she's fucking phenomenal. Oh, yeah, Zaheer's wife was there. God damn. It was such a beautiful fucking meet. Yes. Yes. So anyone who's getting into this sport and gets good or somewhat good and just wants to see what it's like to be in a warm-up room, like you said, of these big fucking competitions, go. Save the money and fucking go. Because you can learn so much. I've done biggish competitions now for about 5 years, and every time I come out of them, having learned how to warm up better and on meet day than
inspired.
Yeah. Yeah. And meeting a ton of people, just the amount of information you can get. Now you got the balls to send that person a fucking DM. "Hey, I got a question with this." And they can put your face to when they met you, and you can get some good information. You're not trying to steal everything from people, but sometimes you just need a little tweaking in something. Cause I get it from me a lot. And you know, I'll give you information. I'll help you out. Fuck it. Yeah, I've got a friend I met in York, Pennsylvania. Still to this day, we talk at least once every 2 weeks from 2009 when I went down to IPA Worlds and I got best squat and bench only guy. I missed all three fucking deadlifts. I got this big fucking award. I don't know. Yeah, but my buddy was going to be one of the first people to squat 800 naked knee. At that time, this is like I said, 2009. Now a lot more people are doing it, but he tore his hamstring something fierce, and he never competed again. But man, to see him launch out of that fucking thing, he went at least 10 feet. So, but yeah, I suggest people, you know, travel to do some meets because they're so much fun.
Kevin, I got a question for you. When I was at a Detroit Barbell, like, you know, 2010 or whatnot, everybody was geared. Everybody that I know, like, from top on down, everybody was geared. The only raw lifter I saw there like, was you. I mean, what made you – I mean, you had to have seen these people do these, like, incredible lifts and, like, you know, Clay and everybody doing these amazing benches and whatnot. And there had to be some part of you that was like, man, I'd really like to do those numbers. But what made you stay raw?
He dabbled here and there. He wanted
– I did dabble, especially with briefs and whatnot, after muscle spasms in my lower back. And I did do a bench shirt meet. One time I challenged a friend because he was going for 500.
It's always that.
And I said, fuck it, dude. I'll put a shirt on. I gave myself 3 weeks to learn how to bench in a shirt, and I bet I'll bench 500. And sure as shit, I did. And so did he, though. So it worked. Whatever
did you
I did
come
worked.
Down to 242 for that?
Yeah, that was the 32 fucking pound weight cut in 3 days where I mistimed my laxative. And so when I went to go put all my weight back on, it was just coming out the other end. So I think I the next day I weighed maybe 248, and I came down from like 268 or something like that. The reason I stayed in gear free was, I think it was one of the very first two DB beats I was ever at. I don't remember. I was only helping. I was just there side spotting. I was a new lifter to the gym. And it was after squats were all done. We already broke down the mono. The bench was out there. And I go to the bathroom to use the bathroom. And there's a guy in there trying to get out of his squat suit, fucking crying and bleeding in his leg. Seriously. Do you remember me telling you this? And it took me about 20 minutes. I had to help the guy. But I think right then and there, that early, I knew I would never, I'll never do that. Because look at all the energy he's wasting to get into it. Then to get out of it, and he's still got six more lifts to do, plus, you know, warm-ups for the bench and the deadlift.
It's totally exhausting.
Yeah. So why do you think these guys in gear, they hit an awesome squat, and then the bench gets a little iffy, and then there's fucking deadlift sucks because they all can't fucking pull shit.
And you're waiting on a workout stimulant to get you through the deadlift because you're so tired.
So you see those guys outside of the greats, like, you know, Pacifico and Brian Carroll, like we already talked about, they have it down to a science. But as a new guy, I didn't see the benefit in it at all. Secondly, I didn't have the money for the gear, although I probably could have found stuff around DBB because everyone had extra shirts and shit like that. But I liked the raw aspect. I always did. Initially, my nickname was Raw Dog. I was the first raw lifter at DBB, and now I'm the first raw lifter to ever get on their board for my deadlift, 745, a couple years ago at 275. I love that I was the first raw lifter ever to get on their board.
Like, you probably don't know this. Matter of fact, I know you don't know this. But, like, when I came to Barbell, I didn't know shit for shit. I really didn't. Like, you know, I was a quote-unquote bodybuilder. So, like, that's all I knew. Really, that's all I knew. I just knew that, like, it kind of went – it diametrically opposed why I got into lifting because I wanted to be strong. And here I am doing physique sports. So nothing against physique sports at all. But when I went to Barbell, like, I had wanted to go into gear because I saw everybody get these great, you know, I had a bench shirt, I had some briefs and a squat suit and all that stuff. The reason that I didn't go into gear, like, when I did my first meet and I never did gear again, was because of you. Honestly, and I mean this wholeheartedly, when I saw you lift, I saw you squat, I saw you deadlift, and I saw you bench. It was so fucking impressive to see somebody do those numbers raw and not having to, you know, obviously not put in the gear. But it was just, to me, it was just pure balls. And to, like I said, and you don't know this, and I never told anybody this, but the reason that I stay raw was because I saw you lift when I was younger.
Wow, so, thank you. No. I didn't know I affected anybody that way.
No, absolutely you do.
Kept it like DMX says, raw dog in a butt, like what?
But what? But yeah. So Mary, you and Kevin have been married for how many years now?
Going on 10.
So were you lifting when you and Kevin met? Were you lifting? Because if you look at Mary, guys, she's jacked. So if you know you would think that she's been lifting her whole life. But how did you get started? Was it Kevin that started you, or what did you do before? Did you play sports?
No, I'm an art girl. I'm an art girl. I do art restoration for a living. But I think one of the reasons why I think I started Lyft is, you know, obviously with Kevin, hanging out with everybody, going to these meets. And I did enjoy it. And I've always liked sports, but I never really found anything that I truly liked. And I was trying to do cardio because that's what girls are supposed to do, you know. and hated it, hated running, hated anything to do with it. And I kept getting like a, I kept popping a rib. I know it sounds so silly. I kept popping a rib because part of my job, I'm hunched over a lot. Mm-hmm. My doctor's like, you got to gain weight in your back. How the fuck do you do that? So I said, Kevin, what do I need to do? And he said, well, let's, you know, let's start going to the gym. Let's start working out a little bit. So I started going to the gym with him, and I started really liking actually the weight training aspect of it, really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of spiraled from there. And then I remember actually a long time ago, Clay's wife, Shelly, said something to me. She's like, oh, are you into working out? I'm like, no, not at all. She's like, good. I said, why do you say that? And she's like, well, because once you do, you're going to become addicted. Sure shit, now I'm fully addicted. That's why I'm sitting at Strength Depot because our garage gym is being torn down. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm going to take a week off. It's been 4 days. But I'm also dealing with a torn hip labrum, so I totally understand the frustration on that. And I've been doing light squatting, nothing heavy, deadlifting. I can't really go too heavy. And it's definitely frustrating. So,
Are you going through the same thing that we talked about, like the lack of endorphin rush?
Totally. So, I've learned to try to you know, some of the things that Rob and Kevin were talking about. I've learned kind of how to squat with my hip labrum. I'm now doing a much narrow squatter that I can do that, but it's less painful. But usually it's a pretty wide squatter. Now I can't squat wide. Due to my hip issue, I think it's caused me some back issues as well, just because I have so many imbalances right now. So deadlifting is another issue. And so I fully understand having those pains and like going, Kevin and future Rob were talking about earlier, is that trying to still work out within your injury.
How close, when you're healthy and you're going to get healthy, do you have that bug to compete? Because we all want you to. And,
I get asked that all the time, and no, I don't want to say I'll never compete, but I just don't have the interest in it. Partially due to my job, I'm constantly on call, and so it can affect the way my job works. I know art restoration, you should be on call, but I'm the boss, and I run 42 branches, so I'm constantly being pulled, and so I don't want to have to do a 12-week program just to lose a week because I had to do something work-related, because I'm going to get really angry.
Yeah.
And now when I just miss a week from working out, I get angry. I can't even imagine if I'm putting in that work for a competition and I miss that week.
Just the anguish that you'd face doing that?
Yeah. To me, I don't want to take that stress on when my job's already too stressful as it is. I don't want to add more stress to my life. And I can't say that maybe in the future I won't, but right now I'm kind of just enjoying the working out aspect. So.
What's going on with your labrum? Have you had an MRI? What's the
torn.
Next step? What are they going to do?
I have met with a couple doctors. One of them basically said if we do surgery, it can actually cause scar tissue buildup. And so it's one of those risks that I have to deal with. You know, do I want to go through surgery and risk that or just kind of deal with what I've been dealing with?
There are other options, too.
Right.
PRP.
PRP, absolutely. And stem cell, that's what Kevin's looking at.
Yeah.
Just insurance doesn't cover that.
No, it's all out of pocket.
And, and I was in physical therapy for 4 months, and it did nothing for me. I do have another – I'm also dealing with – I have arthritis in my sacrum, basically. I get a lot of sacrum pain, a lot of sciatic pain. So I have that.
Do we have the same hips? It sounds like –
No, it's two different spots.
We have the same hip issues and injury patterns. And
right, and because I have these issues, I'm my glutes aren't firing properly, so I'm doing everything with my back, which is great. But it's like I'm too stubborn to just take the time off. Because I enjoy this so much, so I'd rather work through the injury than.
They put me on. They had me on Melexican, and so it's they use it for people with rheumatoid arthritis, and it started making my head spin. So like, I'm standing and everything's fine, and out of nowhere I'll start spinning, and it feels like I'm just spinning around in a circle, and I had to stop that because I can't do that with my job either. But injuries are, like, you know, it's funny because like when we started. Like, there, you didn't have Kelly Starrett. Like, we're sitting here, and I'm looking at a book of Kelly Starrett on the shelf right here. We didn't have Kelly Starrett. We didn't have a lot of these prehab-type things.
No
Donnie Thompson. None of that stuff. So we would just go in and,
No Becky.
No Becky. Yeah,
I just pointed out her thing.
Thank you, Becky. We didn't have that. We just came in, and you do, like, a little bit of light stretching, and then not even foam rolling, really. And you just go. And I think, like, the internet at this point has made it a lot better and a lot more.
You have options.
Yeah, you can, you know, the options that you can actually see and visualize. So, you know, before somebody could tell you, well, stretch like this, this is what you're supposed to do. Now I can go on a YouTube site, Mobility Wad, whatever, and take a look at it. So I think that's helped lifters in general. And I'm hoping that that increases longevity in lifting as well. So,
well, I saw when we were working out, I looked over and I think Andrew, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I saw you doing some mobility work because I was like, oh, he's doing some mobility work. You know, I recognize some of the things there that, so I know that he obviously wants to prevent injury, you know, as well. So, yeah, some of these younger people are seeing that there's ways to prevent that by doing some mobility work.
Helping, like, the team that you guys are and helping each other, training together, everything else, what would you say your favorite meet was to watch your husband?
Well, I call Kevin the worst coach ever, for me anyway, because he doesn't coach me. He's just there to make sure I don't hurt myself or eat the bar. But I would say this one in Columbus.
Is that plan that he doesn't coach you?
Yeah, I think so. No, he's supposed to coach me, but he doesn't. I think the one in Columbus that he was talking about, just because it's 770, was pretty impressive. Was
he on cloud nine when he was driving home? Party that night? Do you guys had a ball?
There was another meet that we did down in Columbus, and I don't think he did really well, but a bunch of us ended up partying afterwards, and that stuck out to me. I think some of our friends, like a friend's wife was in pajamas, and we ended up at a bar.
So fucking hammered.
Having a really bad chafing, so he had to get, like, he had his garbage bag full of ice and on his, you know, chafing in the hotel room. I'm just looking at that maid, and she comes in, she's going to find a garbage bag of, like, water.
Where exactly was said chafing?
It looked like I had fucking Snicker bars on my taint. Seriously, it was so fucking bad. I got completely naked, a huge bag of fucking ice, put it on my cock and balls and taint. And 45 minutes later, I was able to walk out, but I was still walking out like I just shit my pants about 5 pounds because I was walking out so wide. But we went and got so fucking drunk. We closed the fucking Mexican restaurant.
That made it okay?
Oh, it was fucking blast. When you were with good people, you know, it doesn't matter. I just shit the bed in this fucking meet. It was so hot in there. It was outside. It was midsummer. Oh, stupid fucking decision. But all my friends were there. We all fucking lifted. We had a good time after. Fucking
everybody did bad because it was so hot. It was outside. It was dog days.
Yeah, dog days at Columbus.
What created the Snickers bar?
The sweating.
Because my thighs rub together. When you got fucking thighs, they rub together.
They wear Velcro all the time.
I miss the chafing. God.
Embrace the chafe is what Dan Green used to tell me.
So, Kevin, I have a couple more questions, if I can. Your programming, like, when you program for yourself, correct?
I did up until I just actually hired a coach because I figured I know how to get me strong, and there has to be another way to do it, but I would constantly second-guess myself every couple of weeks.
Same thing.
Yep. So I just hired a coach.
That your percentages were too high?
No, just that. Just something.
Something was too slow as what you thought it would be.
Why was something so easy today? You know what I'm saying? Am I programming myself too light? It didn't matter. Just something always came up. To where am I doing this fucking shit right? I could program other people to PRs, but me, I'm constantly second guessing myself. So I hired a coach, Sweet Burns. We haven't really had a chance to work together because I've been injured. He coached me a little bit for my bench meet, and I went against his better judgment. Well, he told me to go for 523. I went 529, 6 pounds. I probably still would have tore my pec. But the conversation me and him had is unlike I've ever had in my life with another power lifter. The initial, like, interview process when I was talking to him. And I've talked to him numerous times before, Raw Unity and at the Gracie V's meet out in San Diego. But the knowledge this fucking guy has, he's like a savant of the sport. He looks at it like those fucking old baseball players look at fucking baseball from the 30s and 40s and just started following all the fucking numbers. If you have a conversation with this man, I fucking suggest it. If you can get his ear, he's got so much weird fucking knowledge about the sport and jumps and percentages and how to get you fucking strong. It was freshening to me that I had this conversation, and I'm super excited to work with him. I can't wait to get to work with him. He's going to help me with my rehab when I can start my rehab. But programming, the way I do it, I like a periodization effect.
A linear type periodization?
Linear. Okay. Everything, I believe, starts with like 5-3-1.
Right.
That's the first book I ever read. That's what any new lifter should be reading, knowing
it. I think
it.
I brought that back from Wendler and gave it to you.
Yeah. And how many conversations or how many programs have me and you just thought of based on 5-3-1 and bastardized it to our own way because of what we know? But everything starts from there. And then I took out some things and added in some things. But for the most part, everything starts with 5-3-1. He just released another book, and I didn't buy it yet because after I read Beyond 5-3-1, there's like 9,000 programs in there. I think it was just him. He must have been fucking sleepless or something for like 3 fucking days because he just spit out all this information. But it's fucking beautiful. You know, when you really kind of, when you have the mind for this shit and you look at it, it's like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. And you study a little bit more. This fucking guy, he knows what the fuck he's talking about. But look what Jim's done. He's worked with college fucking students and all these guys, kind of like a Matt Wenning. Mm-hmm. He has so many different things to fall back on to try on people, and he has proof to back it up.
He's got a huge sample size of people that he's
worked
with. Huge
sample size. So that's what I love about 5-3-1. So if anybody is starting in the sport, they have to buy the original and read it because it's a very easy read.
Yeah.
And you can understand it. But you also have to be with people who know how to lift. People who know how to lift technically. Because you see it a lot. The people lifting the wrong way. They're herky-jerky. The fucking bar. Just because Dan Green pulls the whip out of the bar before he fucking deadlifts doesn't mean you need to. You're not that fucking badass. You don't have fucking thighs the size of fucking car tires like he does. You don't need to be jerking on the bar. You got to get your body tight. That's what I like about new lifters is they need to, or they should read is that book and just start learning the technicalities of the lift, learning the leverages, and not being so fucking ego driven to constantly max out every 2 weeks. And you know what, Shane? I have to say, this is my first time being in this new shop. I went out to remember that Michigan barbell out there a while back. I went out there to help somebody with a seminar, and it was a fucking joke fest. Because everybody in there, there's like 5 power lifters in there, all lifting in their fucking slingshot singlets, their slingshot shoes, and they had everything slingshot, and they figured they needed all that to go squat 240 pounds. And they probably weighed 275. So it's a breath of fresh air, because I don't go to a lot of gyms anymore, because I stay at home, to walk in here, and I didn't see any of that, so it was fucking awesome.
I've actually got the Louis Simmons poster up over there on the wall that says don't have a $100 shoes and a 10-cent squat.
Yeah.
Like, I love it. I saw that, and actually Nick Gout got that for me.
It was
a grand opening. And I just think that, I don't know, that kind of embodies what we have going on here. There's not a whole lot of...
I don't give a fuck what a you look show, like. Right. If you can't fucking, you know, you can't fucking lift the weight, you don't need those fucking shoes.
Yeah.
You're squatting your barefoot. How many times have you squatted barefoot?
That was where it's at, you know?
Yeah, I see a lot of people
with his work boots.
Right.
His big work boots.
Work boots work.
Yep.
You know what? I remember you and your work boots over at DBB.
Yeah, I always benched in my work boots.
Yeah.
Because I liked a little bit of lip. Now I wear Reebok Zigs because I got a thicker sole to them. So I can, when I grind my feet behind me, I got a little bit more sole in there. And my feet are locked in. They've never moved. But fuck, I don't want to be hitting a nice fucking bench and then my feet move and you get a no lift because your foot moves.
Yeah.
So no, I grind my feet in there. I want a big sole on my feet.
Do you guys think there's any truth to the thought or theory that these elevated heels are creating a quad dominant lifter and you're creating an imbalance in yourself by being kind of perched up, or that's just the motion that Raw is going to take? Because recently I abandoned my elevated heeled shoes and went back to the cons, and I feel much better. I have the torn hip, I believe, and an MRI will tell me in a couple of weeks. But having a physical assessment and being totally quad dominant, as I believe most people are, it had to get back to what's my posterior chain, and I've got to bring up this weakness. But did I create this weakness by switching to these shoes?
I noticed in myself, and I can only base this on me, when I squat in heeled shoes, and I have tried them, I'm a quad-dominant squatter as it is. I'm a quad-dominant puller as it is. But when I squat in those shoes, I feel I'm constantly on my toes. So when I front squat no shoes, I feel at home, which is weird. All the weight's on the front of me, but my elbows are out, so I'm balancing the bar a little bit better. I feel like I front squat better, which is a totally, you know, a core erector exercise, but also hits most of your quads. But I can also do the same weight in my cons. But I just know how it feels in me. So if that is a thing and that's a trend and it's going to be proven here, I could be in line with that. Yes, I believe Olympic lifting, or people just want to sell shoes because equipment makes you better. Yeah, I could see that becoming a thing.
I kind of want to answer something, though. I think for all the years I've been watching powerlifting, and part of my powerlifting, and part of my being that I'm so visually, as part of my background, that I think that everyone's bodies are slightly different. Like, people are like, oh, your knee's front squatter, you're out. I think some people's bodies are going to be that way. So depending on how their body is will determine rather if that shoe is going to be beneficial or not beneficial for them, depending on how their physique is. So I don't think that, you know, if Kevin uses the shoe, it may not affect him the way it affects you, depending on how you squat, you know. But someone who is quad dominant, yes, if you're wearing the shoes, it's kind of silly because you're just putting more into your quad than you should. But someone that's not a quad dominant, then the shoe probably looks fine for them, I just think.
I think the same thing is, you know, and it goes back to what we've all said and we keep reiterating on this podcast is you have to find your biomechanical advantage. You have to find out where you fit in, where your groove is, and then you work within that. If a shoe doesn't help you, and if a shoe's not going to, like, improve your groove,
abandon it.
It's like, you know, like, I think we referenced Jim's 531 a couple times. The thing, the beauty about Jim's 531 is it's fucking simple. It's simple. You know, it's a standard linear periodization. You know, if you want to get stronger, you're going to do this, this, and this, and push a fucking sled, and, you know, and do a couple accessory movements. But I think people try and it's not fucking rocket science. People try and reinvent the wheel all the time in this. I mean, basically, and we've said it before, all we're doing is mimicking hard work. So, you know, we have a sedentary lifestyle. A lot of people are behind desks, you know, not everybody is out, you know, working on a farm. And, like, we mimic hard work, and that's what we're doing. But you have to find your own biomechanical advantages and work within them. No shoe, no anything else. Like, a lot of people have tight Achilles. So a lot of people have tight Achilles, and they can't get the stretch. So I can see where maybe a slight lift on a shoe would help because it elongates the Achilles, and it helps that fulcrum. So I get that. Yeah, absolutely. But at the same token, if it doesn't work for you, don't fucking do it.
See, that's where, you know, you brought up Achilles and shit like that. I don't think like that. Mm-hmm. I just think about how it feels inside of me.
Mm-hmm.
I've never looked that in-depth into shit. I'll try stuff for a while. If it just doesn't feel right, if I feel like I'm getting weaker, I'm fucking done. I know how to get me strong, and I'm going to keep going down that route.
So you've got that proprioception of,
right,
of exactly, is this working?
But not,
throw it against the wall, does it stick? Does it fall down?
That's kind of with me. I never look too deep, honestly, because I'm too interested in just what's going to work with me, I guess. If I had the kind of mind where I could read books on what the body does, I got a buddy like that. He knows all that fucking shit. I'll just ask him. I'll get the Cliff Notes version. I ain't going to read about all that. But, yeah, I just whatever shoe fits is the way I'm going. If I got to fight to make it fucking fit, it ain't going to work because I don't want to be taking an 800-pound squat and then my knees shoot too far fucking forward, and then there you go. Your leg's done, and say goodnight to the career.
Well, it's the same thing when you hear people speak about, okay, back, hips back. That's the cue that everybody says for squatting, right? Well, it's not always hips back, guys. I mean, there are quad-dominant squatters. Everybody's got to find the way that they squat the right way for their leverage, and that's why sometimes these cues, I mean, everybody needs cues, and I need them too. But, I mean, you have to find out what works for you. Rob, you agree?
Absolutely. Before I forget, an impressive thing that I always noticed with you, Kev, is that you went out and you sought knowledge from wherever you could pick it up from. And you've done West Side. We've done the Conduit. When the Conduit didn't work, we were in the 531. When that became, you wanted something different or feed off or take it to the next level.
Talking and working with Dan Green.
Then you worked with Brandon.
About 2 years.
You've worked with so many cats,
Brandon,
and now Swede.
Mike Isretel. I've worked with a lot of people for short periods of time, Dan Green and the 531 was probably my longest. Me and Dan Green were friends, so it wasn't always just like I was his client. We just talked lifting a lot. And I learned so much from him because he is a wealth of knowledge. He studied Russian style lifting once he went to Russia, I think he said in 07 or 08 to compete. And I think he ran into Konstantin Podziv, I think one of the greatest 220 lifters of all time. And so that really took Dan into a different direction when he came up with what he did, and it worked. I put 110 pounds on my PR, on my total, under Dan Green in 10 weeks. It was accumulation of months prior of conversations, but then the actual program was 10 weeks and 110 pounds on my total, which is ungodly to a full, you know, it's a huge number. And I'll be forever thankful for that because his program does work, but it does beat you down. You've got to take a long off season after that.
I think that was the strongest I've ever been is trying to glean what you gained from him, and I'm going to try and take whatever's working.
It was high percentage reps. You're working 90+% for a lot of straight weeks.
It was some of the hardest work I've ever done, and I beat myself down.
But on meet day, nothing feels heavy, and that's what you want. And that's what I learned from him. But now, you know, I worked with Brandon for a short amount of time, getting me ready for a meet. But he helped me mentally. I was kind of lost mentally in myself. You probably remember that day in the garage. And I just shot Brandon a text message. And he's like, dude, I'll call you in 5 minutes. And we had a 45-minute conversation. And then for the next 5 weeks leading into the San Diego meet, it was just me and him talking a little bit about this and that. And he just, you know, kind of guided me. Didn't really give me numbers, but just said, what are you doing? Let's just do this. He didn't charge me a fucking dime. He did it all on his, you know, and it was beautiful. And I went out there, I shit the bed in a squat, but I hit a PR bench and a PR deadlift. I had a fucking blast. So, but mentally 5 weeks out, I was not there. I felt so lost, and I don't know why. It just fucking happened out of nowhere.
But, confidence issues or?
Rob, it was so. What was bothering me then? Probably something in my back or probably my elbows where nothing was going right because your elbows control so much when you get under the bar and you try to torque under a squat. I remember you couldn't
even steer your car for a while. You're steering your car with your legs.
And and then benching, obviously, you know, your elbows do so much. Yeah, but he got me to a place I needed to. He told me to drink a ton of mineral water and eat fucking beef livers. So that's what I did, and I got healthy.
And whether it worked or not, the placebo effect of
I believed it.
I will.
And I loved it, and I'll forever be indebted to that man.
His writings and things that is amazing to see where he's came from and the transformation of just watching or following Brandon, who I don't know, I've met a couple times, and just to see this peaceful warrior come out and the beauty of, you know, This is what I wanted to say before I forget it, is life will humble you. And it's a constant theme. The minute you get too full of yourself, you value something too much. It's funny how life kind of sets you straight and lets you know you're, you know, we've all had egos over the years and we've all, you know, you're all chasing or you're almost to that level. You know, I was the level I wanted to beat Paul Urchak. And then I wanted to beat the squat of Matt Kay, and you're getting to this level, and you're getting to this level, and something happens, and life humbles you, and it's a gift.
We don't get paid for this shit. We do this just for the love of the fucking brutality of this sport, you know. And life comes into play, home life, everything comes into play. And then the sport itself will fucking humble you faster than anything.
And then it feeds you after that humbling. Yeah. You know,
it's
beauty of why you do this, of why, what's the hole you're filling. But
so, you know, no matter how confident we are, we're still doubting ourselves somewhere. And to lean on somebody, you know, shoot a text, dude, I fucking blew tonight, whatever. I'm not always looking for a yes man. You know, I don't want to be around yes
you got
man.
This
yeah no I'd rather get a well don't fucking suck today then you know
it could be like a whole lot worse with this let me give you the perspective of this injury let me give you the perspective of this
I like over your head. I like to throw I'm not gonna bring that up but I like to say one of my training partners was pretty sick for a while and never missed a training session, going through one of the worst things you could ever go through. And I think about that one a lot. Or my training partner Marty, who almost had his leg taken off from a motorcycle accident. And he's still in there.
Battling and strong as hell.
Squatting and deadlifting in the mid-sixes when he's, you know, in peak fucking performance with a leg that looks like, I even said it to him, I said, did you get ate by a shark once? Because the thing just looks horrible.
Could you imagine him if he was completely 100% how strong Marty'd be?
Marty is one of the strongest dudes I've ever seen. I've trained with him for Martin Gunjack. He's at 220, completely ripped, probably 4% body fat, will throw up an 1,900 pound total on any given day. But his job, like us, sucks, and he works way too much in a shitty fucking shift, so he doesn't have the time for it like he used to. But any given day, 1,900 total. He was that good at 220.
Who would you say is the strongest cat you've ever seen? I've seen all these people.
J.P. Price. I've never seen Brian Shaw in person, but then it would be him. But J.P. Price is the first person, always comes to my mind. I love watching his videos now. He does a lot of strongman things or just rehab-type stuff. Sandbag tosses right now. He's throwing around 250-pound bags just for fun. He just overhead log-pressed 405, I think it was yesterday. And he's toying with it. He's having fun with it. He's smiling and is a big, giant, fucking fluffy guy. You just want to fucking bear hug him. But fucking JP. I hope you listen to this. He bought me chafing cream because I was in pain. And him and his wife, fucking just awesome people that they are. He's the strongest cat I've ever seen. But, you know, I kind of thought you were going to ask me that. But I have to throw Dan Bell in there, too. My God, I know he even says that he squats high. His body just won't go fucking down there. He's so fucking tight. I think he does concrete for a living. He's on his fucking knees slinging fucking shit. And that fucking monster gets in there with 1,000 pounds, walks out, hits it for fucking two, maybe an inch high. But on meat day, I've seen him bury it. Fuck it, you know? You squat high in training, you only got to be low on meat day.
You're talking about the cage, right? Where he's part of the grand? Yeah.
Yes.
He did. He also did that with a lip in, too. Like, literally right before he went and squatted, he tossed in a big lip. And I was just like, you know what? You're the fucking man.
Dude, I've had some beers with him in San Diego, and his people, JP the Boss or whatever boss, the guy, band, the Raps guy. I've had some dips with him, but I constantly dip lifts with a dip in. Sometimes if I miss a lift because I didn't, I go throw a dip in and be like, this has got to be the game changer. So I'll throw in a lipper. Daniel Bell and him. I've never seen Eric Lillybridge lift. I would love to one day go out to Iowa just to watch him do what he does and just see his warm-up area, how he mentally prepares. Because when it's all said and done, Eric's going to be the greatest American power lifter of all time. As much as everyone loves Eddie, what Eric's doing at a young age consistently for years and years and years to come.
He's a beast.
How can you not love that guy? And you know what's funny? Is if you send him a message on Facebook, he'll fucking respond to you. He will. Wow. He's responded to me for a couple little things. Right before I squatted 800, I asked him, how should I wrap these wraps? It was a short response, but I think it was tight as fuck. But he responded, and the first time I ever squatted 800 was about 2 weeks after I talked to him, and I got it. It was ugly, but I did it. But I mean, he'll fucking respond to people, and he's, you know, greatest American, you know, active living power lifter right now. You know, Eddie's still alive, but he's not competitive. Dan Green's injured, and when Dan gets healthy, I'm pretty sure he'll make a run at something, but who knows what. I don't know how bad his injury was. But yeah, Eric, I would love to see Eric. And, but I think those three guys right now, you know, but don't count out Rob Philippus. But he doesn't have, you know, the bench game or the deadlift game like JP does. Or, JP Carroll. How could I forget him? God damn. He fucking threw around, what was it, 2250 on just getting warm-up meat. And then he threw another 60 pounds 6 months later on his fucking total. Come on, that shit's fucking ridiculous. And he's just getting started. So right now I think it's a great time to be in a raw powerlifting because you're going to see some guys put up some numbers and it's just going to be a fucking ball to watch. I just kind of hope to stay in there.
This resurgent in raw lifting is pretty fun. I mean, like, it's fun to see because, like I said, when I started, it was just all, like, you know, geared and stuff like that. But it's fun to see now raw lifting being the shit now. So
I get a kick out of the smaller guys, too. I always say weight is relative, you know. But you weighed, what, 198 at the meet on the 10th?
194.
So, and you pulled 750 in your second attempt and just missed 8 at lockout? Hands gave out or whatever?
Hamstring popped.
Hamstring. So at 194, you're pulling 800 pounds. It's just ridiculous. But we got the chick that you follow, Marissa Inda, competed today. Where was she at? Somewhere overseas.
Yeah.
But I saw a Juggernaut posted. She came in first place again. The high two squat, low two bench, and like a 4-something deadlift. At what does she weigh, like 98 pounds?
Yeah, or super tiny man.
With the narrowest stance I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Weirdest stance. Yeah. Scares me, but she can do it, so have at it.
Yeah.
But those numbers are relative, but it's so fucking impressive to their fucking body weight, the shit that people are doing nowadays. Like you said, the information's out there and for us to get so easily. And I think powerlifters aren't like they used to be, where they all hated each other. There's stories of guys greasing bars in the warm-up room.
Turning off lights.
Yeah, or actually, I've seen this.
You may have one that you're pretty close with.
Yeah.
Who actually trains with you. It's some of the dirtiest shit you've ever seen.
And,
like, he's got the best stories you've ever heard.
Yeah. At APF or WPO Worlds 2012, when I was there, I had a hard time getting on any equipment because I was the only American. I didn't have the easiest time to lift there. And I was one of the smaller guys. I was 275. I think I weighed in right at 275. And it wasn't an easy competition for me. But, yeah, the warm-up room was like a fucking battle in itself. And good thing I had a lot of friends there. A lot of people came from Detroit to Vegas to be there and in the lift. But, yeah, I was able to. The warm-up rooms, you know, just 2012 were different than anything I've seen now. So, yeah, raw lifting's taken off. But I think there's more friends in it now, which is cool.
It's became a society and a culture, whereas before everything was hidden. Mm-hmm. And you know, obviously pre-social media, it obviously changed it. And
yeah, it's all only powerlifting USA was the only way to get information.
Maybe
back
outlaw site when the internet came aboard.
Yep.
Powerlifting watch and that's about it.
Yep.
So, well, Kevin and Mary, I think we're going to wrap this up today. We've got an hour and 20 minutes of some of the best content I've probably ever had on here. So I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming, Kevin. You too, Mary. I mean, I know you guys went out of your way to do this. So
it's our pleasure.
Well, thank you very much. So
it's awesome.
Anybody else have anything they want to add?
Good.
Well, again, thanks, Kevin. Thank you, Mary. And so for Drew and for Shane and for Rob and Jen, I wish Jen were here again. Let's just say we miss her. Jen's like our glue here in our franchise.
We love you, Jen.
Yep. And we're just going to say goodbye, and thanks again for listening, and peace out.
It's awesome.
Voices Radio.